Juliette Binoche has forged a career playing strong women unafraid to take on new challenges in The English Patient, Chocolat, and many of the other 40-plus films she's appeared in since 1983. And this season, she's taken that fearlessness even further. There's the opening of her latest film called Paris, also a retrospective of her films, and a dance performance, which she co-created and performs with Akram Khan, both at BAM, and an exhibition and the publication of a book of her paintings and poems. I'm very pleased that despite all of those events, she has found some time to visit my show to tell us about them, and welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
Hard to know where to start, but why don't we begin with the new film, Paris, directed by Cedric Clapiche, which opens on Friday the 18th at the Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and the IFC Center. It's your latest film to be released here, but you've made any number since, haven't you, including one that opened earlier this year, Summer Hours.
Right, yeah, and I made like five films in 10, 11 months. That was my year of movies. But then since then, you know, two years ago, I've only done one film because I was busy on my dance tour and creation. But yes, Paris is complex. It's, you know, bad mood, good moods, depends on the days. As you know, as tourists, you know, it's a place that's a little mysterious because you tend to love Paris, and yet people sometimes are a little taken aback by the way that people are because of the stress and all that. But inside of it, you know, there's many waves of getting into people's hearts.
Well, it's really an ensemble piece in a way. It's an update of an earlier film by Cedric Clapiche called When the Cat's Away, which was about a neighborhood in Paris. Did you talk to Clapiche about this? Was he trying to create a portrait of contemporary Parisian society across all socioeconomic levels?
Well, we talked about the script together because as he was writing it, we met several times. And he wanted me in his film, but he didn't know exactly how the character was going to be pictured and how he was going to see her. But we talked about her, and I said it'd be good for her to work in a social level somehow. So we see the inside of her life and also how she's dealing with the outside, but yet very realistic. So he was very keen on the idea as well. And I said to him it'd be nice for her to have lots of children with a lot of different skin colors. And he, of course, laughed about it because he liked the idea, but he made it more realistic in having only three children, which, you know, is happening when a woman being alone, dealing with kids on her own and having a tough work and no many hours to, you know, to give to her children and but struggling. And so you have many characters in this film described in a realistic way, I'd say.
Well, she's a social worker who has to help other people organize their lives, but her own life is a bit of a mess. And then her brother, who's a dancer, has just been diagnosed with a life-threatening heart condition, and she and her three kids move in with them.
Exactly, and it's interesting that sometimes difficulty in life allows you to be in touch with your real self somehow and to transform. So the illness of her brother actually brings her another way of looking at life and somehow a more hopeful way.
This is also a return to another one of the favorite themes of the director, Cedric Clapiche, about the behavior of individuals inside a group. He did that in Le Péril Jeune. He did it in his first feature film, Rien de Tout. He did it in When the Cat's Away. I can't think of too many other French directors who even think that way.
He's very
this
Parisian.
Is more like Nashville in an odd way than it is like any French film.
You're right. He's Cedric Clapiche. He's a real French director, and he's been very successful in France in Paris because he pictures, you know, the themes that are very related to contemporary life of people. Yeah.
This is also a love letter to the city of Paris, and we get these beautiful shots of the city from Pierre's window, and you can't help but think, gee, that has to be the prettiest city in the world. And yet, Do you think that Paris has gotten a bad rap, especially from tourists, the sense that it's an unfriendly and snobbish place?
Well, the thing is, it's true, when you go to California, you get into a shop and you have this beautiful smile coming to you and saying, you know, hi, you're my best friend. And it's true when you're in Paris and you get into a shop, you get like, you're my worst enemy ever. That's the first feeling maybe you
get. You're going to
make
me work.
But don't take it personally, because it's just a facade, and it's just a sort of, protection or a defensive system that we learn to have somehow, because it's tough. Cities are tough. But at the same time, if you have a little patience with the person, you just smile and have a, and then it opens up very easily. You just have, don't take it too personally. That's all I can say.
Well, New York has a similar reputation, and New Yorkers know that we're really warm and loving people. In Summer Hours, you played a French woman who lives in the United States. Would French people listening to your accent have noticed a little bit of an Americanization of the accent? Because I know when
she speaks French in the movie.
I know she does, but when British people go back to England, they're always told, even though they sound incredibly English to Americans, they're always told, gee, you sound just like an American.
Well, it's a little different, because if it's English, then of course you're influenced because you speak, it's your native language, English. But as a complete different language as French, it's not exactly working the same way. But nevertheless, it'd be good to have some kind of English somewhere in the French. And I wanted to do that, but he was not for it. He was frightened. And I regret that a little bit, because I thought it'd be very interesting, because I know French people living here and they have an accent. But I don't think he found it very realistic. But so you have to deal with the fears, you know, of directors and all that. That's part of it.
Juliette Binoche is my guest. She's here to talk about four different things that she's involved with. Two events at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, a retrospective of your films, and a dance performance called In-I, which you created with the dancer and choreographer Akram Khan. But let's talk about the retrospective first. You've made, 40-something movies. How many are in the retrospective?
Around 20.
Were you consulted as to which ones?
Kind of, but I felt it was more interesting to have their point of view of what they wanted to show somehow, because, I think it's in different countries, because we've been touring, you know, with the retrospective and exhibition and all that and the book. And it was interesting to see the different somehow choices, and I like the fact that it's different from one country to another one.
Well, some of these films haven't even been shown in the United States, unfortunately, and that has to feel odd, because you're so well known for some of the films you've done, both in English and some of the French films, and then there are other ones that I sound interesting. I wish I'd seen them.
Right. Well, you can now.
Well, this retrospective includes The English Patient, which you won an Oscar for, but also some films less known here, like Disengagement.
Right.
Do you have any favorites? Do actors have favorites, or are they all your children?
No, they're all your children, but it depends, you know, if you see your film as an art form outside of you somehow, or if you remember the shooting, and sometimes it doesn't match. Sometimes you love the film and the shooting has been difficult, or, you know, and you learn to love the difficulties as well. So I'd say I love them all. At the same time, I feel like it triggered something in my life or me as an artist in different specific films.
Well, how much is the director a key to all of that? Because you've worked with some of the best, Louis Malle, Krzysztof Kieślowski, Anthony Minghella, Abel Ferrara. I mean, this is a range. Leos Carax, Olivia Assayas, Michael Haneke, Lasse Hallström, Ho Xiao Shen, the great Taiwanese director, Chantal Ackerman, who is as close to a great experimental filmmaker as you can get. Do you choose projects because you're interested in the director?
Yeah, mostly. And lately I've been working with Abbas Kiarostami and
the great Iranian director.
Yeah, and it changes my life. It changes my point of view, and it's getting into visionary minds. And actually, the more I'm working with real artists, somehow the more free I am, because they let you be. And some of the directors sometimes I've been frustrated with are controllers, and they're trying to make a film. And there it's not about making a film, it's recreating life and having a vision, a sanctuary vision of life.
I'm interested in your work with Kiarostami. First of all, did you make it in Iran?
No, in Tuscany.
Because when he was on the show, we talked about the fact that he usually works with non-professionals. And he told me that some of his friends, other filmmakers, said, you're crazy to work with non-professionals. So he made a movie with professional actors, and he went back to his friends and said, you're crazy to work with professionals. But here he is making a film with a very professional actor.
He doesn't see me as a professional. That's probably the difference. Because... why is that? I think because we're good friends and we laugh so easily about things, so it makes it real. Mm-hmm. It's not about being professional. And I think he saw in some of my films some of the scenes where you don't see the acting. He doesn't like the acting, which I completely agree with. I hate when I see acting. I want to see real life, or something beyond acting. And so when he wrote that, and as we worked, he was surprised sometimes by wanting to know whether I anticipated wanting to do that or not, because he's discovering acting. He discovered acting as we were doing it. You know, what I call acting is the non-acting, I'd say. So it was beautiful to see him, witness him changing his views on it, because... of course, it's a defense system. You know, when a director wants to be so close to life and doesn't want to be held by any kind of mind or teaching, as you know, you get into as actors. You know, you go into schools and stuff, and you get stuck with ways of doing it.
And so, then you've worked in theater, and then you worked in film, and you have approaches to adjust to both.
But how do you get the nakedness, the core of yourself, you know, and get it rid of all this? These learned things, and that's my passion in a way, because like Hao Shaoxian never works with actors either, and so the fact they choose me as it's a very beautiful sign. It's almost better than an Oscar, because it's like feeling like it's about the inner self more than the outside.
And what language did you work in
for the Abbas's film? Mm. Three languages.
And you could do that.
Well, the Italian I had to... my first boyfriend was Italian, so I had some notions that I still had. And actually what he said to me, it'd be good to put at the end of the film, remerciement, thanks to, and my boyfriend's name, my first one. So I love that kind of thing, you know.
And you speak English with almost an accentless English. Been in any number of English language films, beginning with The Unbearable Lightness of Being. You speak Spanish, I imagine?
No, I don't.
Even though you...
My father does.
Well, we'll talk about your parents and other things in a little while, because we have to get into some of the other things that you've done, which is make art. In fact, we have a slideshow of some of your paintings on our webpage, so people can go now to WNYC.org and get a sense of what we're going to be talking about. But you have done so many different things. You have been on Broadway in Harold Pinter's Betrayal, haven't
mm-hmm.
you?
Mm-hmm.
And theater in France, theater here. We're going to try to cover everything, the full range of Juliette Binoche's career, after we take a little break for the news. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We're back with Juliette Binoche, who has a number of different things happening in New York right now. There's the opening of a film called Paris, directed by Cedric Clapiche. There is a retrospective of her films at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Also, dance performances, which he co-created and performs with Akram Khan. And there is a new exhibit of her paintings and the publication of a book, which is of paintings and poems. Now, how did you wind up with all of doing all these different things? I know your parents were involved in a number of different arts. Is that where it began?
I always painted, and the writing comes through me without really wanting to write. It's just happening. And also with the computers now, it's so easy to it pulls you into writing more easily somehow. But it came as a snowball, I'd say, because I started with the idea of the dance. And then because we were going to be touring, you know, for 6 months and going to 12 different venues, I thought it'd be great to show the films that I've made and with so many different people. So there's a Japanese director I work with, there's a Taiwanese, there's a, you know, and so as we went on, then I thought I don't want to be passive about the retrospective because I don't want it to be about past. I don't mind. You know, I don't care about past. I want it to be more present, more actual. And so what I did is that for Les Cahiers du Cinéma, which is a French magazine about movies, they asked me to do portraits of directors. And I said, no way I'm going to choose it. You choose it because I don't want to take the guilt of not painting others, you know, and having difficulty with that choice. So I did those 7 portraits that were published and people loved it. So I thought it'd be great to make lots of portraits of directors I work with the retrospective of films. And then I thought, why not doing the auto portraits? And it was a kind of a more of a question to myself. Do I remember what I've been through? Would I know the eyes of that character or the mouth of that character or the feeling of it? And as I was doing it, it was almost like an analysis, you know, a sort of therapy maybe, but also trying to find the core of the character. And it's interesting because sometimes it doesn't match what people expect, or I expected even, because as I'm doing it, I don't know what's going to happen.
So you're describing painting as almost being like acting in some way.
Absolutely. For me, it's exactly the same thing as the dance as well. You get it, you jump into it, and you don't know what's going to happen. You're as well guided as you think you're guiding, because there's an equilibrium in this unknown world where you feel that, oh, I belong there.
Well, in many films, when somebody's playing an actor, we see them go up to the canvas with the brush and then cut to a hand that actually does the painting. But you did the paintings in Lovers on the Bridge, didn't you?
I did some paintings because what happened is that I was living with Leo Skerrax at the time, the director, and as he was writing the script, it was on vacation. I started painting him and drawing him because I was bored. And so as I was painting, actually, he got the idea of that me being a painter in the film. So it was interesting that he created this whole story as I was painting him. And that's I started to paint again because as a teenager, I love painting. And I had a wonderful teacher who was a painter, actually, who unfortunately died, but it was his time. But after, I painted more or less, you know, depending on my time and because I'm a mother as well. So you struggle a little bit to having a personal stillness time, I'd say. But I was kind of excited with this idea of exhibition to go back to it because sometimes when you put yourself into a challenge, you're forcing yourself to have the time and do it.
So the paintings actually are triptychs, aren't they? There's a portrait of the director, a portrait of the character you played, and then you also have a poem.
So the poem came like, I'd say naturally, because I wanted to talk to Kieslowski. I wanted to say words to him.
And you can't anymore because he's died.
He died, and so I started writing. More than poems, it was kind of letters, but it's the way I write with few words. But the more I was taking off, you know, taking words off, and it became poems more because it was the nature of the way I wanted to say more into in between words than the words themselves. So poetry allows you that space. And then Anthony
Minghella, also no longer with us.
Right. And Carolyn, his wife, said to me, write a poem for him for his funeral of joy. about joy. So that's what I did, and it came like this, and I thought, it'd be good to write some words to the directors that are still alive. And so it came to me like that, like an urge to say to the directors I work with what I feel, or, you know, some kind of the connection we had or we didn't have. And I was surprised to some of the answers, the responses I got from the directors, like Peter Kosminski, who I don't think we really made the film we dreamt of. Wuthering Heights. Actually, I'm in the poem. I'm expressing the frustration, you know, of the work with him, but still with an open heart, because there's no revenge or, you know, wanted to.
You're not happy with that film.
No, I was not, mm-hmm. And he knows it. But the letter I got from him in return was just overwhelming for me, and I was so touched, and I felt. Only to get this back was worth it, you know.
You know, some of these directors you worked with again and again, and even in some surprising ways, Anthony Minghella, you did commercials with, didn't you?
Well, I proposed him to do a Lancôme film for publicity, because I loved him and I was very at ease with him, and actually he had the idea of me singing. finally Lancôme was frightened of this initiation. So we end up doing something else.
Let's talk about the dance. Well, first of all, people can, as I said earlier, there is a slideshow of the paintings on our webpage, and they're also on exhibit at the French Embassy. Can anybody just go in there and
Absolutely.
See it?
Yeah, you can go anytime. And I'm going to be signing books.
Called Portrait in Eyes.
In Eyes, yeah, at Barnes & Noble on Broadway.
The dance collaboration, can you tell us about that? Have you danced all your life as well?
Not at all. I've never danced before. I was doing mat exercises. I was good at it, but not exceptional. But it just happened. I was doing shooting Breaking and Entering in London at the time. Like 2.5 years ago, and my masseuse, her elbow in my back, me facing down, and asked me, "Do you want to dance?" And out of the blue, I say yes, and that was it. And then the next time I saw her, she gave me an invitation to go and see Zero Degree, which was Akram Khan's last show. And it happened, actually, that her husband, my masseuse's husband, is the producer of Akram Khan. So I went to see the show. I loved it. And we sat down, had a drink after the show. And they said, do you want to have 3 days in a studio trying things with Akram and see if you could do something together? So I'd say, yeah, of course, after the shooting, let's do that. And that's what we did. And we spent the 3 days. And after, we say, okay. Bet. Let's try and do this crazy challenge.
Well, I remember speaking to an actor once about singing in a film, and she said, well, I'd never sung before, but I'm an actor, so I was playing a singer, and I sang. And I sang. Well, she wound up singing quite well. You, as an actor, you have to know how to move, and I assume that some of this would be easier for you than somebody else.
You're right in a way. I know that in America, singing and dancing is very much part of the acting thing, you know. But in France, it's a little more divided, maybe. But moving as an actor, I think, is in a way more difficult, because you've got to stay with the emotion, stay with the sensation. As dancers, they divide themselves, you know. There's the body language. It becomes the body language. And the challenge for me was to stay within my acting, with myself, and what is the movement of the emotion. That became like the challenge. But as I said, I've never danced before, so I had to go through all the stages of being with my body and going through, you know, some limitations, of course, with ligaments and tension and tendons.
And you haven't been doing it all your life, so you probably weren't as limber as you might have been if
Right.
you had started when you were a teenager.
But then I discovered that the energy and the muscle world are kind of not the same, but they have to come together. So you, if you have the energy, which is the Chinese call it the qi, you know, if you're conscious of that, somehow you're using the muscles in a better way. So I feel like what I discovered that if you put your mind within your body, the body is actually such a quick learner.
Now, this dance does have a kind of a plot, doesn't it? It's the story of a love affair from start to finish. So did that help you as an actor? Because you could...
The storyline?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we... in a way, what happened is that we started... Because Akram Khan wanted to act, you know. So the challenge was big for him, you know, because you learn as a dancer, you know, to not speak, you speak with your body. So all of a sudden, for him to open up and get into the emotions and all that, it was like a big step forward and frightening for him. So we started with that, and it came that the theme of love came across, of course. The lack of love, the joy of love, the, you know, the expectations, the frustration, all that together. And as we get going, the expression, the movement came, and so we put it together. I would say genuinely because of the way we process. But also, I invited my American coach Susan Batson, who's in Black and Nexus, and she's a wonderful person and coach, and to help us as an outsider because being inside of the co-creation together, sometimes was difficult to have an outsider view, even though we had a camera with us and to make choices and all.
Well, you've been performing it all over the world now.
Yes, we've been in...
With the retrospective, where Rome, Brussels, Tokyo, Abu Dhabi, Sydney, many other places.
China as well.
Has it changed? And is this the last stop?
It's the last stop. Well, we're going back to Paris because there was so much frustration that people couldn't get in. So we're going back in October to Paris. But we're going to be New York is our last venue outside of Europe, and it's exciting for us to finish here.
Has it gotten easier?
We stopped for 5 months, and to tell you the truth, I'm a little. I don't know if it's nervous, the right term, but Akram is coming 3 days before the premiere, so you can imagine. Mm. It's a duo. It's not so you're depending on the other. But I think we know the show. We've been on 80 shows, and we know it. But it's just the memory is it will. I hope this is going to work out.
Do you still get nervous before a performance?
Funny enough, on this show, I've never got nervous. When I get on stage at the beginning, it's always with this need of encountering the audience and also Akram because it's a duo and something in myself as well because I believe that love is also an encounter inside yourself because the other allows you to get into spaces and you've never been. And so for me, it's the excitement and the need, it takes over the fear. The only time I got frightened was in Paris because I had 300 friends and family members in the audience and I felt, oh, my God, if it doesn't work tonight, I'm going to be like having this burden in my head and shoulders, you know, for many years. So it was the only time I got really I freaked out.
Well, I'm sure you'll continue making films and you'll probably continue making art. What about dance?
Oh, no. No, thank you.
This is it?
This is it. This is it. You know, or in a different way. What I discovered, it's Qigong, which is working with Qi. And that's where I want to go, actually. That's my excitement for the next years coming because I think it takes a while to get into it. But I have a Chinese master who does calligraphy and as well as dance with the qi, and that's where I want to go because I think it's less brutal on the body in a way. It's more respectful with the energy, And because I've seen a lot of dancers damaging their body so easily because they're pushing themselves so much in the stretching and in the strength and getting there. And I think at the end of the day, at the end of the life, you know, it's kind of hard. So it's what I learned going through all that kind of, you know, in parentheses life, that it's not my world. I was happy to have the experience. I loved it, but also it's damn hard.
So I assumed that you were going to go on to do some music and then write a novel.
Well, Gilles Jacob, I don't know if you know him. Gilles Jacob, he's the Cannes Festival head, and he's pushing me to write. So it's funny you say that.
Meanwhile, we have the art at the French Institute and also in a book. And you said you're having a signing at Barnes & Noble. Do you want to tell us about that?
The day is on Friday next week. No, this coming week. I'm sorry. I have signed. Somebody's telling me this coming Friday.
Well, actually, we have everything listed on our show page at WNYC.org. The book signing, the exhibit, and people can see some of the work, the schedule of the performances at BAM, where you are opening the Next Wave Festival, the retrospective of the films, and, of course, the new film called Paris, which is opening this week. Thank you so much for talking
Thank
about all those things
me.
With us today. Juliette Binoche.
Great.